Hi, and welcome to the Scientist Podcast, where we bring you the research community like you've never heard it before. Today on episode 11, we'll be talking about the importance of social media in academia, as well as suggesting ways that you can improve your own following.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to the Scientist Podcast. Today we'll be discussing the importance of social media and how it can benefit you as an academic. Here to talk to us about this is Stephanie, the person behind Career Conversations. Would you be able to tell us about yourself and what Career Conversations is?
Yes. First of all, hello. It's really nice to be here. Career Conversations is a platform that helps academics to improve their social media profile and so on, so that they can really leverage all of the career opportunities. Especially, I think, right now during a pandemic, it is quite important that people are aware of how to leverage social media and build connections online. And this is basically what I'm doing. I'm helping academics with that, and especially with Twitter. And maybe we can get into detail of why I think Twitter is the best platform for academics to do that. But basically, yeah, in a nutshell, it is that. And also I try to help academics to, you know, get this little bit of a motivation boost. So I have some videos also on PhD motivation, so that not only they are, in the end, they have both this network and also this little extra push to get the most of their career.
And is that what you do on a day-to-day basis, or are you an academic yourself?
I'm in academia myself. So I'm slowly merging into turning Career Conversations into a business, but it is going rather slowly. So I still have a day job, and Career Conversations is right now my side hustle.
Lovely. And how did you learn the stuff that you're sort of telling, you're passing on to others about social media?
Actually, I just learned it by doing, because I had a podcast myself a while ago. So Career Conversations used to be a podcast, and it had quite some good content, but at the same time, people didn't find it. So eventually I thought, if I continue doing this, then I have to figure out how to show it to people. And there was not very much good Twitter advice online, and most academics are on Twitter. And it was back then I was also targeting academics. So I thought, I have to understand the Twitter algorithm, and I have to understand how to use Twitter in my favor, because otherwise there's no point in that. And then I looked, since there was no good Twitter advice online, I looked at Sunny Lenarduzzi and Vanessa Lau, who are more experts on YouTube and Instagram, and adapted their advice and tried whether it also works on Twitter. And some of the things did. And this is then now what I'm passing on to others.
So is that how your Career Conversations, well, it was originally a platform, but did you turn to Twitter to promote that, or were you like, oh, podcasts aren't working, let's see if we can do the same on Twitter?
No, it was really, well, the idea was always to encourage and inspire academics to make the most of their career. I now just found this niche that nobody is really talking about. So first in this podcast, I was interviewing high achievers, and was even like Nobel Prize winners and so on. And then when I realized the potential of Twitter, because suddenly I got lots of opportunities through Twitter, and I thought, nobody is talking about this, even though this is so important. I need to pass this on to people. And then I did only one video about it, and it was actually supposed to be only this one video, but people got so interested in that I thought, okay, maybe I need to explain more. And this is how it all developed. So actually there was no intention for me to even talk about Twitter. I was no Twitter user, actually. So for 2 years or something, I had like 60 followers. Yeah. I only used social media professionally. I was not a private social media user, and I was about to hire someone actually to do my social media, because I had no interest in that. So, and I think this is also maybe why I'm good at explaining those things, because I'm not intuitive in that sense with social media. So everything that I'm doing is thought through.
If you've taught yourself it, then if you've formulated it in your brain, it's easier to pass it on to someone at a more basic level than it would be just making these bold statements.
Yes, definitely. I think so. And I mean, I've tested all of the theories. I've tested them also with other people, and the advice that I've given people have helped them to grow. Like, I have one friend who grew to 500 followers within a week, and only helped him to tweak a few things.
Yeah,
and it's so important. Like, he's a writer, and he found a lot of fellow writers that were then supporting his work and so on, and giving him some advice and so on. So
Yeah. So why Twitter? Is that just because it's sort of there's a big sphere of academia on there, or is it just that's the way of just people spread their research?
I think it is a lucky coincidence for researchers that they are on Twitter because, well, first of all, our target audience is on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it makes sense to be on Twitter. But on top of that, Twitter has this beautiful retweet function, for instance. So mm-hmm. if one, let's say one writer is retweeting the tweet of another writer, then mm-hmm. all of their followers can see this and all of them can then reply and also give advice. So the ability to reach a lot of people that we didn't know in the beginning is, I think, one of the biggest advantages of Twitter.
And do you think you could ever have replicated sort of the expansion in Twitter in other platforms, or is academia sort of limited to Twitter sort of thing?
I think other platforms don't want that, to be honest. Mm-hmm. For instance, when you look at Instagram has a really, really crappy search function. So you can only mm-hmm. search for what people have written in their bio, which is limited to one or two sentences. Well, on Twitter, you can search for everything that people have said in their tweets. So I think in that sense, we are already quite limited for Instagram. For LinkedIn, to be honest, I don't understand LinkedIn. Because, well, there's also like some knowledge to that. And I know some people are nailing LinkedIn. I personally don't.
Leave that to them.
No, because what I don't understand is there are sometimes posts from people that have done them 2 weeks ago that mm-hmm. are showing up very high up in my timeline. And then there's another post that has been done like an hour ago. And I don't mm-hmm. understand how LinkedIn ranks those posts. And I think if you don't really understand it, then there's not much worth or not much value in posting there when you can do this on Twitter as well. So this is why Twitter is just the most convenient platform, I think, where you need to have the least knowledge to get the most effects.
So what are the things you can be doing for your Twitter account? I heard there's a Twitter algorithm. Would you be able to explain all of these sorts of things? I'm very new to this.
So I think the most important thing to know actually about any social media platform is to figure out or to know what they want. And mm-hmm. what social media platforms want is to keep you on their platform. And as soon as you have figured out how to, well, and to keep other people on the platform. And as soon as you have figured out how to do this on the platform, then they will push you in their algorithm and show your tweets or your posts to other people. So the way that social media platforms do that is they look at how many people have seen, for instance, a tweet and how many people have interacted with a tweet. And this way they determine what kind of tweet is interesting. So this is, for instance, one of the reasons why follow for follow is such a terrible idea. When you have a lot of followers that have only followed you because you have followed them, then they will not interact with your tweets. And therefore, lots of people will see your tweet, but not many people will interact with it. And therefore, it is being lost in the algorithm.
And by interact, do you mean likes, retweets, comments? It's not as simple as just seeing it.
You have to click on it. Right. There's a function on Twitter to see. So Twitter actually counts every single kind of engagement. So also like clicking on a video and watching it or just expanding the details is already also an interaction.
Right.
So this is, I think, the key of Twitter, to get people to interact with whatever it is that you are doing. Mm-hmm. And this is also a wonderful thing to network, actually. When you have a question and you ask it, then people are giving you their replies. So you have a win-win thing. Like, you will rank high in the algorithm, your tweet will be exposed to more people. And on top of mm-hmm. that, your question is being answered. And I think this is so valuable for academics.
And by being ranked higher in the algorithm, what does that mean? As in, it just gets shown to people that aren't your followers, or your followers, you go higher up, or?
Ah, okay. Both, actually. Right. So I have 20,000 followers, but mm-hmm. my tweets are never shown to 20,000, or not never, but like the regular tweet is not shown to 20,000 people. It is shown mm-hmm. to maybe 10,000 people. So not every single one of your tweets is being shown to every single one of your followers. So ranking high in the algorithm means, first of all, how many people will Twitter show your tweets to? This is the first thing, like how many of your followers. And the second thing is, maybe you've also seen that person, let's say scientist, has liked XYZ tweet. So mm-hmm. sometimes when people like a tweet, then your tweet will also show up in their timeline. So there's actually not really a rule to that in that sense. So Twitter will also show your tweet to people who are not following you. Yeah, just because of the likes and so on.
And what can you do to sort of increase these interactions and things like that?
Structure your, well, you can do several things.
There's lots of ways.
Well, the short answer is structure it in a way that invites people to interact. For instance, you can do a poll where people have to click yes or no. And the nice thing, then again, like Twitter has built in this little function that people can only see the result of a poll when they interact with the poll.
Right.
So it is kind of pushing people to
interact. So if you're curious, then people will interact naturally, which again with academics sort of by nature are curious, I guess, in this field, doing stuff like that is asking for interactions really, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So I think academics are also just a great audience to grow your Twitter fast.
Yeah,
and the other thing, but there are lots of details that I think will be difficult to explain on a podcast because it is more like visual things that I would have to be explaining. But you have to keep another thing in mind as well. So first of all, it is, of course, and have a tweet that invites people to interact with it. But first of all, people need to notice your tweet. And this is, I think, where lots of people get it wrong. Like there are so many tweets that are showing up in people's news feeds and everyone is competing for attention. So your tweet has to stand out somehow. Mm-hmm. And I have my 3-step tweet formula, actually, which describes the way that I structure tweets so that they get noticed. And one of the biggest mistakes that I see people do is actually use too many media, use too many photos. And I had this epiphany moment when I was at a restaurant with my family and there were the specials in a big red box. And none of us has seen this or has noticed the specials actually, because our brains are so trained to blend out everything that looks like an ad. So these days people are trying to make their tweets stand out so much actually that our brains are sort of filtering them out. So and I've also tried to replicate this with several other accounts, and everyone told me that when they try to do tweets with pictures or with images and without, usually those without are doing a lot better, and especially when you combine them with lots of paragraphs. So that your tweet still takes up space, but it is not a visually loud tweet, let's say.
Yeah. Wow. So are there any sort of myths, like Twitter myths, that are sort of in general circulation, how to grow your following, but in sort of reality don't actually work?
Yeah, so the biggest one is this follow for follow thing. And right. I get invited very often to this follow loops where... let's not even get into what follow loops are. Basically, following anyone who is following you back, or the other way around, saying, I will follow you back if you follow me, because it is just going to hurt your profile on the long term.
Sort of and empty followers.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what I recommend instead is to find people that have a profile that is very, very similar to yours, and then look at their following and look at who is interacting with their tweets, because those people are going to be interested in your tweets as well. Mm-hmm. Because since you both have the same message, their followers will also like your content.
Mm-hmm. And what are the benefits of having sort of this? So it's all well and good having this big following, big interactions, but as like a scientist or anyone in academia or just generally, what does that sort of, how does that translate into benefits?
Yeah, that is super important actually, because I think pure followers is just a vanity metric that is not getting you anywhere. Yeah. So you need to be clear what you want out of a Twitter profile and why you are having a Twitter profile in the first place. One thing that I was a little surprised. There is a direct and significant correlation between the amounts of citation that a paper gets and the amounts of retweets that a paper has.
Really?
And as scientists, one of the things that we want is a paper that gets cited a lot. So what I recommend is to build an audience of people that are going to be interested in your research, because they are going to retweet and interact with your paper. And this is like the audience that you want to later cite your paper, right? Mm-hmm. So it is a bit like this dig your well before you're thirsty thing, that even when you're starting your PhD, you can already start to grow a following that is interested in your research and then have those people hopefully cite you later. But this is only one thing. Another thing is that it's just great, like I said, to ask questions. Like very often I also ask scientific questions. Some I'd rather do this on my private Twitter profile, but still it is so helpful when I have a question or don't find a paper or something to just ask Twitter. And they have lots of great answers because they are all experts in a similar field to yours. Mm-hmm. And there are also is job opportunities. I've interacted with professors that I would never dare to approach on a conference. And on Twitter, it is just a little bit more informal. So I think it is also a great networking opportunity. Mm-hmm. And also it is just building confidence, I think. This is one of the most important things. When you are saying something to your Twitter community, and then they're saying, oh, you're actually right. This is a good point. I think this is helping you to build confidence and self-belief, let's say.
So sort of like whilst it will benefit you in an academic sense, also sort of like almost the mental health side of it as well, just knowing you're appreciated and sort of things like that.
Yeah, well, mental health is difficult because Twitter can also be very, very toxic.
Yes.
I see so many people who are saying, I'm so grateful for this whole academic Twitter community because you're helping me so much and I feel really appreciated by you and so on. So I feel mostly the academic Twitter community is a very, very kind and supportive community. Although, well, sometimes they also go under my, some people go under my skin, but
right.
I have the feeling, I see lots of people who I think have built confidence through the interaction with lots of kind people who are supporting them.
Yeah. And with all of this sort of advice you're giving people, how are you delivering it? Is it through your Twitter? I noticed you have a YouTube as well, or is it sort of like private consultations you have?
Yes, so I do a YouTube channel, like as you said, but this is... I plan to make this exclusively about Twitter, not necessarily for academics, but yeah, this is, well, we don't have to get into this because it's also a little bit complicated, my strategy behind YouTube. For Twitter, yes, I give direct, I don't do that many DMs anymore because it's just getting too much. I've started to do webinars. So far for universities, every now and then I was already giving webinars, like career conversations webinars, where I was saying the same thing. Now I'm starting to do them for my own platform. I'm starting to move into this one-on-one coaching thing, which is also then a paid service. And ultimately, I would like to do an online course where I show people in like a very concise way how they can improve their Twitter, so that it is also affordable for PhD candidates.
So with your YouTube, you were saying that's completely separate from academia. So people that maybe want to learn how to improve their Twitter but aren't necessarily looking to do it from an academia point of view, is that what that's for?
Yes, exactly. So YouTube I use mostly for the... searchability, let's say. So Twitter is more like a thing you shout out your message and it will resonate with some people. While on YouTube, you are kind of responding to people's questions in a way. Like people are typing something into the search bar. And then I found a few search terms that were not having good answers. And I was like replying to them, but it is a different mindset, let's say. So focusing too much on Twitter for academics on YouTube is a way to get lost again in the YouTube algorithm.
Yeah. So are you developing sort of your understanding of the YouTube algorithm now that you've sort of mastered the Twitter algorithm?
Actually, I love the YouTube thing a lot more because YouTube has a lot better analytics. So I'm a geek for those things somehow. I was really not expecting this, but I love to dive into the analytics and to see which kind of keywords are good to do a video about because they're going to help me rank high in search and then eventually get suggested by YouTube and so on. But it is like a whole different story. By the way, this is also why I moved from a podcast to a YouTube channel, because it gives a lot more control over how to be found. So if I were to give scientists like one advice, it would be to take your podcast and also turn them into a YouTube video. I mean, it can just be an audio format, but still... it was a good platform.
To sort of keep it on podcast and on publish it on YouTube.
Yes, exactly.
Wow, free consultation service. This is brilliant.
I mean, it is, this is why I don't have a podcast anymore, because I realized it is so difficult to be found as a podcast. Mm-hmm. Well, on YouTube, it's a lot easier to be exposed to a new audience.
And I guess are you finding your success with YouTube is going sort of quicker than Twitter, or sort of same speed, or is it just completely different?
It's completely different.
Right.
Okay. So with the YouTube algorithm, I was growing very, very slowly for quite mm-hmm. some time. And now something has happened that I haven't really figured out, but my watch time is suddenly increasing a lot.
Right.
And I hear that you need a certain amount of views per video, because it is all of those Twitter videos that are now suddenly going.
Right. So you're sort of using them hand in hand.
Yeah.
Perfect. So,
But I have, like I said, I think it is also that I've done more videos about Twitter, that now YouTube is kind of positioning me a little bit as an expert on YouTube, or categorizing me like this and suggesting my videos to more people. I get a higher watch time, and therefore, again, I guess.
So what's next? What sort of are you working on now to bring in sort of for career conversations?
So my short-term goal is to expand on the one-on-one coaching. Mm-hmm. Then I'm right now working with some business people to actually develop my online course. And let's see when I can finish it. I don't think before the end of the year, mm-hmm. Because it is still my side job. And eventually I would also like to consult universities to help them push their staff's research, because there's so much SEO and algorithm power left unused, because most universities are not really nailing their social media. And I mm-hmm. think it would be so awesome if they supported the research of their PhD candidates more. So this is the long-term goal. Midterm goal is the online course, and short-term is the one-on-one coaching.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. I think it's been really, really interesting. I've definitely learned a lot about sort of Twitter and the importances of it. And I'm sure so will everyone else. And everyone, go check out Career Conversations on Twitter if you haven't already, because it's brilliant. So thank you so much for coming on.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Scientist Podcast. To catch up on more episodes, find The Scientist Podcast on Spotify or visit www.scientist.net.